Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George.
Hello, and this is Mark in St. Paul welcoming you to another episode of the North and South of Things. And joining me today in Atlanta is George. George, good afternoon.
How are you, Mark? It's a wonderful day here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, it's a balmy summer day here, and I just ordered a lawn service to come and mow my lawn. So we can have that little chore taken off of our list. But today, we're going to tackle the topic of professional sports, and particularly the public financing of professional sports facilities, such as in Atlanta and also here in Minneapolis. And we're talking about professional football.
It's opportune that that we both talk about this topic today, and both of our cities are dealing with this issue, and in Atlanta on multiple fronts. So I don't know if you read, it's not been that long ago, it's been a couple months, that President Obama proposed in his 2016 budget that he would bar the use of tax-exempt bonds to finance portions of these facilities. For us, the Atlanta Falcons Stadium. For you, I guess it's the Viking Stadium?
That's correct, the Minnesota Vikings.
And that is a common structure. I will say, without getting too far ahead into our topic, Atlanta used 100% of public financing to build the Georgia Dome back in 1992, much less of a much smaller percentage of the new project will come from public financing. But the vehicle they tend to use is this notion of selling tax-free bonds to help finance the actual construction. And so it looks like President Obama would like that to stop, because apparently the federal government has lost significant amount of tax revenue that way.
I'm sure they have. And, you know, that's a big picture of this that floats in the background is, you know, who gets the revenue? Is it the local economy? Is it the local community? Is it the state? Is it the team? All of these things come into play, and it's a really complex and complicated issue, and you really need to kind of look at the fine print. George, do you want to tell us a little bit how the funding for this new Atlanta Falcons stadium is going?
Yeah, it is. It's quite a different scenario than the last than when the Georgia Dome was built. That cost $200 million to build, and it was publicly financed. The entire amount was publicly financed. It's a different world in today's stadiums. They're all very expensive because they have a lot of new attributes to them that, you know, the old tried and true stadiums didn't really have. I mean, the entire world of technology itself has upgraded, and that adds a huge expense. Plus, everybody wants this new stadium to be a legacy piece. They want it to be a modern work of art. They want it to be every city generally wants to host a Super Bowl. And to do that, you're the size of the stadium has to be of a certain type. It must have a certain number of luxury boxes, corporate sponsored luxury boxes, etc. So the stadiums have gotten, I think, a little bit out of hand on their attributes. I do think the pricing has gotten a little high. We will be paying $1.5 billion for the stadium here in Atlanta. And I say we, let me break that out a little bit. There is another $200 million in financing with these the hotel motel tax, these bonds that we spoke of. So that amount is the same, but it's a much smaller portion of the total project. So it's roughly, you know, 20-25% of the project. The Atlanta Falcons will also get another $200 million in financing from the NFL, which I think is the largest amount of money the NFL has financed. And then that would leave, oh gosh, where's my numbers here? Yeah, that would leave a about $1.1 billion for the team to pay for itself. So, you know, for some folks who are not sports fans, I get this. I get that it's a really painful amount of money. Any money being spent publicly was too much money for the non-sports fan. I get that, but for me, there is another side of this conversation, and that is community benefit, because I do think there's that is in play. But anyway, $1.1 billion will be the remaining price tag that the owner will have to pay, and this will come from ticket sales, and they're doing something in Atlanta that they've not done heretofore. It's not new to the NFL. It's been done in New York and New Jersey and other places, and that is the notion of a private seat license, a PSL. And if I'm not sure if you guys are having that issue, but basically you have to buy a license, and it's a 5-year license, just to get the right to buy the tickets, the season tickets. And if you're in like a premium, one of the premium seats on the 50-yard line, there's probably less than 2,000 of these seats, but you could pay up to $40,000, anywhere from $5,000 to $40,000 just for the license, the 5-year license. So that will generate a bit of income as well. And then the rest will come from ticket sales and other promotions, naming rights, so on and so forth.
Well, George, I'm just kind of going to go on the record here as being one of those non-sports fans.
Shocker.
Shocking, really. Who really takes a critical look at this, and I really don't think that the public financing of a majority of the construction cost is within the best interest. Now, here's what's going on in Minneapolis. The original project was budgeted to be $975 million, but those costs have gone up, and as it stands right now, it's $1.027 billion in upfront capital costs, and more than $529 million, or nearly 52% of the stadium cost, will be paid by private funds made up of a combination of the Vikings' private financing and equity and the MSFA's sale of stadium building licenses. I think they're doing that rather than the seat licensing. However, the Vikings' private financing and equity does include certain NFL financing in the form of a loan that will be repaid by stadium revenues.
Right.
So, it's basically the state of Minnesota approved those stadium building licenses, and also a lot of the cost of this particular stadium. And in the community, a lot of people in the state, and Minnesota has a metropolitan area, but the outlying state, there's kind of a rivalry between outstate and the Twin Cities. And so a lot of people in the outstate are saying, we don't want to pay for this. We're not going to be on the hook for this kind of money. And what we would really like to see is no public financing. And you also had this same kind of attitude with the residents of Minneapolis. And the reason for that is back in 2006, the Minnesota Twins went through something similar, where the Hennepin County came up with $350 million worth of money to build a new Twins stadium. And now the citizens of Minneapolis and the residents of Hennepin County are paying a property tax to do that. And with this latest funding method, the Hennepin County is shelling out over $678 million. So between these two projects and 30 years, you're talking, almost $1 billion just for the residents of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. And so there was a lot of talk here in the state about saying, well, if we don't want to pay for this, the Minnesota Vikings owner basically started to play chicken with the legislature and they basically said, well, we're going to leave. And a lot of citizens, and myself included, I suppose, basically said, well, good riddance.
don't let the door hit you with the good Lord split you.
Exactly. But, you know, the political climate was such, basically, even though the constituents of the state were saying, we don't want this.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. They are using this threat of moving as a leverage tool. And they didn't do that in Atlanta. I'll give that to Arthur Blank for that, the owner, majority owner of the Falcons. Now, you said that the baseball stadium is paying, that support for that stadium is coming in the form of a property tax.
That's correct.
But your football stadium, our stadium is, the funding is coming from a hotel motel tax. So if you're not a resident of Atlanta, I mean, if you're a resident of Atlanta, unless you're staying in a hotel, you're actually not going to pay anything. Now, I think that's a little misleading because I think there's some upkeep and other things, but they're much smaller, you know, in dollars than the actual construction. Is your stadium using a hotel motel tax for their bonds, or is it additional property tax?
No, it's. Let me see here if I can get the.
I mean, it is. I do think it's deplorable would be the word to be threatening to say that the threat right out loud to put it out there, but it is reality. The cities are competing with each other. Left and right, and the issue of Los Angeles is huge right now because Los Angeles is really the only major U.S. city without an NFL team, and they're kind of tired of it. So they're ready to woo anyone. They're willing to pull San Diego Chargers from where they're playing. They're willing to pull St. Louis Rams, and so I mean that's the obvious location because it would be the next opportunity, but.
Well, they tried for several of these bonds, but actually they couldn't get support for it, and they ended up going with a cigarette tax.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the sin tax, as it's often called, on, you know, taxes on liquor and tobacco, you know, you've got a limited market there. Not everyone smokes, not everyone drinks, and, you know, let's face it, there are significant health concerns, especially with smoking, which means your market is dying over the years. So, I mean, this constant going back to these sort of sin taxes, you know, that well is going to eventually become dry.
Especially the cigarette. Especially cigarette tax, I think, because there's just fewer and fewer people smoking each year, unless you're in Europe. They smoke a lot in Europe. Can we tax them?
Well, I think they have their own economic problems at the moment with Greece.
Or as Patsy and Eddie, or Eddie on AbFab said, tax the stupid people! it's not funny. I mean, I get that if you're not a sports fan, it just looks like a colossal waste. I totally get that. I have a different take on it as it relates to the impact, both economic and societal. And I recognize there are arguments on both sides of these coins. There's a good anti-source out there if you've not stumbled on it yet. It's called Field of Dreams.
No, I haven't heard of it.
It's a major study, and it's an ongoing. I got into a little Twitter twit with the guy who was promoting the book, the author, or one of the authors. And I mean, their bone of contention is that often when jurisdictions and teams are trying to get these bonds referendums passed, they'll cite the economic impact of a new development. And the whole Field of Dreams argument is this is poppycock. It's overstated. It's blah, blah, blah. And there's some merit to some of that, but I disagree vehemently with their contention that there's no economic benefit. The Georgia World Congress Center owns the Georgia Dome. and they're like a it's an authority, so it's a quasi governmental entity. So they own the George Dome and the rights to it, and they each year they have economists at either Georgia State University or the University of Georgia to conduct an economic impact study. And in Georgia, the Georgia Dome makes on average an annual economic impact of $250 million. That's an average. It has been as low as slightly below $200 million. And in years that we hosted the Super Bowl in 2000, both the year before and the year of, it was $600 million a year in annual impact. But on average, it's about $250 million. Over the life of the facility, and it was built in 1992, so it's not that old, it's had an economic impact of $8 billion. And, you know, this comes in forms of crowds who come to games, stay in hotels, eat local foods, the other events that happen there. We've had the Super Bowl, we've had the Final Four twice, I think, since I've lived in Atlanta. And then all these other various events. Now, Atlanta is also getting a Major League Soccer team that will occupy the same stadium.
Well, actually, that is also happening here in Minneapolis. We have a Minnesota Soccer League that has actually grown quite a bit in the last few years. I have a friend of mine who is very into the team, and there is going to be some sharing on this. Now, the Minnesota Vikings Stadium, they tore down the Metrodome to build on the same site. Now, before, both the Minnesota Twins and the Minnesota Vikings shared the same facility, and that's no longer the case. Mm-hmm. So it is good that you have this sort of multi-use model,
right,
where you can have other events or another team like soccer. And I think it's better.
It's less painful.
it is less painful because soccer actually has been very big in the immigrant community in Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, when you know the World Cup is on, there is a local movie theater that broadcasts the games, especially the finals, for free. And they open it up to the community, and it's been very well attended. So I think that idea of multi-use, multi-revenue stream models is better than just this one thing.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that there's also there's some other pros, I think, to these types of developments. Our folks seem to be doing a good job at pimping the facility out for other things. For example, not that I'm a fan of Chick-fil-A, but Chick-fil-A hosts, I think, two annual major college football games. The Chick-fil-A kickoff, which kicks off the start of the collegiate football season, that's held here in Atlanta. And then I think there's another one toward the end of the season. I guess it's the Peach Bowl. So they've done a pretty good job at reaching out to not just the football team, and of course now this addition of an official MLS team, the Major League Soccer franchise was added here in Atlanta about a year ago. They won't start till 2017 after the facility's built. But there's some, I think there's some other tangible benefits of having these professional sports teams in your communities. I don't know what the Vikings do or the Twins do in the realm of community charitable giving and whatnot, but I know the Atlanta Falcons since 2002 has awarded $20 million to youth affiliated nonprofits, and the Falcons owner, or Arthur Blank himself, has his own foundation, has given tens of millions, well beyond the $20 million, and you know, probably one of the bigger issues with stadiums in neighborhoods is the impact that it does to the surrounding neighborhoods. In Atlanta, the worst neighborhoods that exist are those around the stadium. And so people there have rightly been annoyed because when they built the Georgia Dome, they said, you know, this is going to improve your neighborhood. And it has not. You know, it has not at all in any shape, form, or fashion. I'm not ready to say that the stadium certainly didn't cause their problems, and I'm not sure the stadium added to their problems, but it definitely did not fix their problems. They have some deep-rooted issues in drugs and crime and property flipping and just a real awful situation. Now, the Blank Foundation and the City of Atlanta are teaming up with $15 million each for a total of $30 million. To generate some renewal, some reinvestment in those communities. It's a drop in the bucket as to what's needed, but at least there's some attention given to it. I do think that's on the con side. I mean, I'm happy to talk about the pros, but I'm also not blind to the fact that there's some negatives associated with this beyond the tax money, and that is the potential impact these places have on neighborhoods. How is it? Do you see that in Minnesota?
Well, the area where the stadium is right downtown. So you're looking at a high density, very modern downtown area. I wouldn't say that the neighborhoods around the stadium in Minneapolis are bad. Actually, there's a lot of luxury housing that is downtown. I haven't heard of really any of that sort of impact. What mostly the impact is with things like traffic. I know that when I would attend concerts for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra over at the Ted Mann Theater, which is on the University of Minnesota campus, which is about a mile and a half to 2 miles from the stadium, I would often get an email notification saying, oh, by the way, there's a game in town. Please keep that in mind for parking, traffic, and that sort of thing. Now, also speaking from personal experience, here in St. Paul, we have a minor league baseball team that just opened their brand new stadium, which is located in Lower Town, which is on the outskirts of downtown St. Paul. And I had to meet some friends at a bar for a happy hour, and it was a game night. And I tell you, I had not seen traffic in downtown St. Paul that bad. And I think what frustrates me as a resident, I know the city back and forth. Mm-hmm. When you get all of these other people who are coming in from the suburbs and the surrounding areas, they don't know the area. They're driving like idiots. They don't know where they're going. And they're, for me, they're a really big inconvenience because they're in my way.
So can you know I get the hell out of my way? I've got life here. Yeah, I do get that. I totally get that. Do you have a public transit, a rail system?
We do. We have two lines. One is the green line and one is the blue line. Now, the green line goes from downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis. Now, if I actually will be attending a St. Paul Saints game on Friday night, August 7th, with a friend of mine. It's her birthday, and this is what I decided to treat her because she likes going to the ball game. And the minor league games, for me, are incredibly entertaining. Mm-hmm. So we will be using public transit to get downtown because it's just not practical to take the car down when it is so convenient. I can drive to her house. We can walk a block and a half, get on the train, and it dumps you off right at the stadium. So it's very convenient. And as far as that is concerned, that was well planned. And before the green line went in, we all knew there was going to be a new stadium. It was just a matter of time.
I do think stadium designers could work better with planners on traffic flow, both inflow and outflow, and expanding rail service in more functional ways that's helpful. Atlanta has a stigma associated with its public transit that it's only for African Americans. There's even a derogatory phrase that our system is called MARTA, Metro Atlanta Rapid something or another. Transit Authority or something. And it has a stigma. It seems to be changing over time, but our rail system is nowhere near as sufficient as it needs to be. And that's another topic for another time. But generally, I think people, fortunately, the rail system does go to the Georgia Dome or close to the Georgia Dome, unlike the Braves baseball stadium, which was near the Capitol and isn't served by rail. Was a bloody nightmare because you had to park in different locations and then take a shuttle, and that was always a huge part of the problem. And unfortunately, with the Braves, and we haven't talked about that just yet. I should say that there's two situations going on in Atlanta: the Atlanta Falcons football team and the Atlanta Braves baseball team. At the same time, we were negotiating. You'll hear a fire truck in the background, kids. That's par for the course here. At the same time, the city of Atlanta and various organizations were negotiating the Falcon Stadium development deal. Unbeknownst to many, the Braves were also in a situation where they were due some $200 million to renovate Turner Field, as well as another $75 million for some situation. And apparently the city was not interested in doing either of those things. And so the Braves had quietly said behind the scenes, do it or we're leaving. And I guess the mayor called their bluff and we lost. So the Atlanta Braves is actually moving moving to a suburb, Cobb County, which is slightly northwest of the city of Atlanta. I mean, it's like a stone's throw, but it's still, it's like maybe 30 miles. It's not even 30 miles. It's probably 20 miles. But they're building a brand new $397 million stadium. I think that's the price tag. And 300 of that is publicly financed, it's a much greater percentage of the total, which I think is wrong. In fact, the way that they've sprung, it was a huge announcement. It was just sort of overnight. Oh, by the way, the Braves are moving and here's what's going to happen. And of course there were public challenges to it, and it, you know, I think they did it a little shady. I will say that the Falcons approach was much more transparent, still a bitter pill for some to swallow, but you know, they've won legal challenges on the use of those bond referendums, so on and so forth.
Exactly. Like you said, this is a complex issue with a lot of opinions.
You brought up an issue when we were talking, getting ready for this episode, about most NFL team owners are billionaires. Why the hell do they need public financing anyway? You know, and in fact, the issue of the NFL itself being a nonprofit, that has been a very recent change. In April of this year, just a few months ago, the NFL announced that they would voluntarily give up their 501c3 status. I don't know if there's so many of those 501c's, whatever, whichever one it was, their nonprofit status. So as of fiscal year 2015, they will be filing and paying taxes. Nobody's really sure what that will mean monetarily. There's also been some confusion around that. It's the NFL league office that was nonprofit. It is not the 32 NFL teams. Your Vikings pay taxes and always have. My Falcons pay taxes and always have. It's not the entire league. It's the league office. Now that still, every team has to pay like a franchise fee and all this kind of stuff. So it could be a sizable amount of tax revenue for the federal government. And I think it's appropriate. I don't think they should be as an association, and it's pretty fascinating if you go read up on the history of that, how it was snuck into some, it wasn't snuck in, it was put in at the last minute into some federal legislation that it was related to when the NFL was trying to merge with there were two leagues. There was the American Football League, and I think NFL was the other, National Football League was the other one, and they were merging. And that was, you know, there was some efforts to make that happen, and one was a concession to allow them to not pay taxes. But the bigger issue, and one that we probably don't have time to talk about right now, is the antitrust exemption they were given. So each of the 32 NFL teams can work together to set broadcast rights and pricing, which is really at its base a violation of antitrust. But they've been given an exception. So that'll be the next battle you'll hear about.
I'm sure.
We have run out of time.
We have.
We have. It's a topic I think a lot of folks will continue to have issues with. I am a sports fan. I'm obviously very pro. I've on record as saying that I think your city's either growing or dying. So I'm pro. Let's build it. Let's do it. But I also think owners need to be accepting more responsibility and a higher percentage. I do think there's a community benefit for it. And I think the amount that should be paid publicly should be relative to the community benefit, which is often hard to calculate. But I do think there should be some portion publicly financed. But I think the overwhelming majority, and I would say 75% or more, should be financed by the actual owner, who are billionaires.
I agree.
Well, last word for us on this topic today.
Last word is, I don't think it's equitable right now. It's a bitter pill to swallow, and we just have to kind of make the best of things because this is the hand that we're dealt.
And there you have it, kids. Tune in next time. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaffingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.